Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me once again today. This episode is going to be a lot of fun. You're going to love this guest, so let's get into it. I'm your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today has jumped out of hundreds of airplanes. He's an Ironman triathlete, and he's an entrepreneur. He started his career at America Online as a senior news editor, and he helped to found the AOL Newsroom. Later in the 90s, he then started a PR firm called The Geek Factory. Later on, he became the creator of Help a Reporter Out, which you may have used. It's called Harrow. And it's a service for journalists, and it was acquired 2 years later in 2010. He is now an international speaker and the creator of Faster Than Normal, a podcast and book to help people turbocharge their focus, productivity, and success. Now, let's hack Peter Shankman. All right, here's a question for you. Have you ever considered starting your own business or launching a startup? If the answer is yes, then you're probably going to want a great logo design as well as business cards and a website. This is where Design Crowd can help. Here's how it works. Four simple steps. Step one, visit designcrowd.com/hack and post a brief describing the design you need. For example, a brand new logo. Step two, Design Crowd will then open your project to their 550,000 plus designers to respond. Step three, within hours, you will receive your first design. And over the course of 3 to 10 days, a typical project will receive 60 to 100 different designs from designers around the world. The fourth and final step, all you need to do then is pick the best design and the designers get paid. If you don't find a design you want, no problem. Design Crowd has a money back guarantee. Crowdsourcing design on Design Crowd helps you access the collective creativity of hundreds of thousands of designers, and it will save you money, time, and help you find the best design possible for your budget. Right now, you can also get a very special offer from Design Crowd. Check out designcrowd.com/hack. That's DesignCrowd, designcrowd.com/hack for up to $100 off your very first project. And we are back, another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have a very, very, very special guest. Peter, welcome to the show.
So good to be here, John. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. My pleasure. So Peter, you are a man that wears many hats. Today, we're talking to Peter, the entrepreneur. So, Peter, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
You know, Lincoln has been quoted, and, you know, it's the internet, so who knows if he actually said it, but something along the lines of, I'm a big believer in good fortune, and I find the harder I work, the more of it I have. I've been really lucky. I think that the number one thing I've done that has contributed to my success has been to look at things that I have to do and say, I get to do them, right? Like not looking at, oh, I have to do whatever, but hey, I'm still not behind a desk and working for someone else and miserable. And so I get to do these expense reports, or I get to be on deadline or whatever. You know, it's still not the thing that I like, I'm terrible at, or the thing that I hate, or the thing that would make me miserable. So, you know, oh, I'm stuck in this 4-hour flight delay and I won't get home till 2 a.m. But yeah, I'm still not hating my life or whatever. And I just think that, you know, it comes down to how you look at things. And I just consider myself ridiculously lucky, like probably about 10 times a day.
But it's a positioning of the mindset rather than changing the external environment.
Well, without question. I mean, life is way too short. I had a, when I started skydiving like 12 years ago or whatever, there was an older skydiver who was heard me bitching about the fact that like my friends who don't skydive didn't understand why I would go and waste my weekend up there with those people. And you want to listen to older skydivers, because if they're older and they still skydive, like they've been smart enough not to die. Right. So you assume they hit, like they have skills you want to hear. And he just looks at me and goes, son, if you can't change the people around you, change the people around you. You know, and that was like this wake up call, like in 2005 or whatever. I'm like, okay, there's no point in wasting time complaining.
How many times have you jumped out of a plane?
Just under 500.
So it's interesting. I've never thought of an older skydiver as the fact that they're surviving. Do you think this would be the same as sort of like looking for mentorship or coaching or whatever you want to call it from older entrepreneurs?
No question about it. I mean, and the thing is, you know, so like I run this mastermind group and everyone says, oh, is it, you know, what kind of people are in it? What's the age range or the experience? I'm like, well, it's everything, because the mastermind groups I've heard of have people who have started and sold like 10 companies and are worth, you know, tens of millions, or they have people who are on their first ride, like 3 months into their first launch. And I'm like, why wouldn't you put those people together? Because the people with all the experience, like they're jaded. They'll give you the experience you need, the hardcore on the ground stuff. But the people who are wide-eyed and like, yeah, this is the greatest thing I've ever done, you know, they have the creative ideas that the successful people who have been might poo-poo until they say, hey, this, you know, might not think about. And so I deliberately came up with this group and like, let's put everyone together, because you want to get advice from everyone. Never turn down advice. Be careful with the advice you act on, but never turn down advice from anyone willing to offer it.
But careful on what you act on. So you have to kind of have your own goalpost to follow.
Oh yeah. I mean, you know, because you'll get advice from people and a good number of them like don't have your best interest at heart or whatever, but to turn it down before you hear it is, you know, in my opinion, wasteful.
So speaking of your mastermind and having people from all different kinds of businesses, you've started businesses, sold businesses, but right now at this time in space, you have, to me, a fascinating business model. How would you describe your business to somebody?
So it's funny. I tell all my people in the mastermind, like, make sure you can pitch your business in 15 seconds to anyone, anywhere with a gun to your head. And I totally cannot do that when put on the spot. Thanks, John. So I like to tell people that I create content. I create content that is useful. I create content that is helpful, and I give 99.9% of it away. You know, like I said, I've been lucky and I started 3 companies. I've sold them. I've been successful in different industries. You know, I wasn't supposed to be doing any of this. I was in graduate school studying fashion and portrait photography in the early 90s in Santa Barbara, walking on the beach with a camera. With 18 credits to go, I lost my financial aid. The government sent me a letter, your parents make too much money, we're taking away your financial aid. And I sent the government back a letter and said, my parents do make too much money, but you know, they keep it. And the government didn't find that funny. And then, you know, again, random twist of fate. 3 months later, I was in a chat room on AOL. And someone in that chat room worked for AOL. And they said, you know, you have a journalism degree, we're trying to build a digital newsroom. And 3 weeks later, I was hired. I was one of the founding editors of AOL News. And from that, you know, a few years at AOL, I learned so much from Steve Case and Ted Leonsis. Moved back to New York right at the start of the dot-com boom, very late 90s. I started the PR firm. And, you know, out of my apartment, because it was easier than, I didn't want to have to work for someone else. AOL spoiled me in the respect that they didn't care how I worked. They said, you know, as long as you get it done. And so for someone with ADHD, awesome. I could work at 2 a.m. I could work however. And then I leave AOL and 3 years later, and I come back to New York and my first job at a magazine. Okay, so we'll see you tomorrow at 8:30. Make sure you're, you know, punched in and at your desk by 8:40, and lunch is from 12 to 12. I'm like, what is this, Russia? You know, it was this horrible experience that taught me that I actually didn't know how to work for anyone else and wasn't good at working for anyone else. And so I went on my own. And that was 19 years ago. Over 19 years ago. And I literally said to myself, when this fails, not if this fails, like when going out of my own fails, I'll get a job. And it's been 19 years and I'm very thankful I haven't had to. So if you ask me to describe what I do, I create content that could be either corporate speaking, which is probably 60% of my time, to companies like American Express, Disney, Huawei, you know, major companies. I have this mastermind group of just under 200 people at shankminds.com. And then I write books and I go on TV. I do random things like that. And of course, then there's the ADHD component, which we can get into later. But I like doing lots of things because I don't function well if I have to be tied down to sort of one track.
Right. So does Shank Minds is quite new, right? In the past year?
2 years old.
Oh, okay. Wow. Time flies. I remember you launching it. So, okay. So there, that's 2 years. But, and so the speaking, the corporate speaking that you do a ton of, because you're like relentlessly traveling and on airplanes, like that didn't start sort of intentionally? Or, you know what I mean? Like you've turned it into a phenomenal business. And I'm assuming the books and the podcast and things feed into the speaking. But you know what I mean? I'm trying to sort of figure out, it's cool to see you 19 years now and be like, this is what I do. And it's a whole bunch of really cool stuff. But
how did it happen?
Yeah, like we're trying to, people are listening and like, I would love to be able to do that in 19 years. Where do I start?
So for me, again, it's always been about, the beauty of ADHD is that I come up with an idea on my first of two connecting flights. And then I get to the lounge and I wait an hour and a half for the connection. And in that hour and a half, I go online and I buy the domain name and put up a site. And then I take my second flight. And by the time I land, it's a business. And, you know, that sounds ridiculous and stupid, but literally that's how I launched Harrow. For me, it's always been about, hey, I have this idea. Let's see what happens. If I had to break it down, I ran a PR firm in the late 90s after AOL. When I went on my own, my first sort of business was I launched a PR firm in the beginning of the dot-com boom. And by launched a PR firm, I meant I was in my apartment with a cat. And I had one client that just paid the rent on my studio apartment that was like roughly the size of, so like picture you, right? That was about the size of my studio apartment. But I had one client. And so as far as I knew, I had a company, right? And I rode the dot-com boom. We had about 8 or 9 employees. We had great clients. We were Napster's first PR agency, right? Like just random stuff. A lot of it comes from never saying no, you know, from saying yes and figuring out how to do it later. When we were like probably towards the height of the dot-com boom, like 2000, early 2001, before the crash, I realized that I am terrible at being a manager. And at that point, my agency needed to be managed. Like I'm still terrible at manager. I admit that. And so instead of like, I could have hired like 5 people, had them manage the 8 employees I had, you know, we would have continued and I wouldn't have been happy. And so I just said, you know, let's not do this anymore. And there was another agency that wanted my clients and they took my staff and I walked away. And in my mind, that was perfectly logical. It wasn't until years later where I would be talking to like business people of 30 and 40 years and they'd say, wait, so you had this profitable, successful business and you just didn't want to do it? So you sold it? I wasn't aware that's a thing you could do. You know, I'm like, well, yeah, I wasn't happy and I wanted to be happy. So, and again, that's always been my mindset. So I left there. I consulted for several years. And then one of the things that I do is I talk to everyone. Like literally, I like, you know, it's the thing that got me in trouble in school. If you're next to me on a plane, if you're sitting next to me on a plane, unless you fake your death, I'm going to know everything about you by the time we land. And over the years, that just got me a ridiculously large Rolodex. And I would talk to reporters because I worked in PR. And I would, you know, what are you working on? They'd say, oh, I'm doing it. I'm like, oh, I know some guy who does, hang on, I'll put you together. And that became Harrow. And it wasn't planned. I didn't say, okay, this is how I'm going to build this company. It just, I figured I could help some journalists and help some friends. And the next thing I knew, we had a mailing list of, you know, 10,000 people. And it was taking off and growing by the day. And I said, okay, I guess this is what I'm doing now. You know, it's like the cartoons you see when like a cat falls down a hole and like, okay, I guess this is my life now. Yeah, that was, and I'm like, great. It's fun. It's easy. I enjoy doing it. I like talking to people. I write these Harrows 3 times a day and I get to have a blurb in the top of each one. That's me ranting about whatever I want. Cool. People have to listen to me, you know? And so from that led to companies calling in, you know, the social media boom, companies calling and saying, hey, can you talk about, so I'm on your list. Can you come and talk to my company or talk to my whatever? And yeah, why not? You know, and again, very little of it was planned.
So never saying no. And this idea of talking to everybody, building up that Rolodex makes sense with Harrow. Harrow's been acquired years ago, but you're still doing that. Like in your book, there's, what, 20 different times where you just literally say your email address. I've met you in person and you've given out your email address to every person in the audience. And you're not a person who just says that, because people do say that and then never respond. You literally respond to, everything I've sent. And I think most people, like, unless somebody sends you something totally ridiculous, obviously. But that's fascinating. because you think of the 25-year-old kid like trying to get started and build up that Rolodex. That's what they do. But then they stop. Once they hit a certain point, it's like, no, I don't do that anymore. Now I do this. And you're just, it's fascinating, man.
When I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do after I came back from AOL, a book had come out written by Reese Schoenfeld. And Reese Schoenfeld was the guy no one knows about, who was the co-founder of CNN with Ted Turner. And the book was called Me and Ted Against the World. And it came out like, I think, like literally the month I got my studio apartment. And, you know, I was trying to figure out how to make rent. I emailed him. I found his email and I sent him an email. I'm like, you know, I just get out of the AOL newsroom. I have this, you know, journalism and digital journalism degree. I was fascinated by your book. You're in New York. Would you ever be up for meeting for coffee? And like in 5 minutes, his assistant emailed back, hey, Reese would love to meet you for coffee and you know, tell you about his life. And the guy spent like an hour and a half with me. And I was a no one. I was a 20-something-year-old kid with, he didn't know me from Adam. And he spent an hour and a half with me, whatever, and bought coffee. And that had such a ridiculous impact on me. And I was raised well by two parents who were teachers and who believed in, you know, bettering the common good. And I guess that stuck. And I've always believed that if there's a way for me to help, you know, I'm not a super athlete. I'm not super strong. I'm not even super smart. You know, I'm not going to save the world by finding cures for diseases. But if I can, you want to pitch me an idea or just get 5 minutes of my time, I think that I'm supposed to do that. And the only thing that's changed now later in my life is that if you do want to meet with me, I'll meet with you, but it has to be on my terms. And my terms are rather odd. So you either have to meet me super early for a run, spin class, you know, or something physical first thing in the morning. Or you can meet me for breakfast, but it's like literally like 6:30 a.m., like egg whites somewhere. Or do like a cryotherapy session with me. In other words, I won't say, can I take 15 minutes to pick your brain over coffee? Because 15 minutes is never 15 minutes. It's like getting there, setting up. It's like 2 hours. What that does is that eliminates like 90% of the people that say they want to meet with me, but then don't really want to follow through. And so the 10% of people who do want to meet with me like are usually very beneficial, but you know, on both ends.
I just want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, Sumo. It's a great tool that I've been using for about a year and a half now. And not just me, but also some pretty big names that you'll probably recognize. Airbnb, The Chive, Tony Robbins, Tim Ferriss, maybe? It's called Sumo, and it's a set of marketing tools that help you automate your business's growth. And personally, I would recommend you start with using their list builder. If you use this link, hacktheentrepreneur.com/sumo, you can use the list builder, converts one-time visitors into lifelong readers and customers. It allows you to create those professional-looking pop-ups that appear on clicks, timers, and before people leave, all with drag-and-drop functionality, so it's super advanced yet super easy to use. Right now, you can try the list builder absolutely for free. Go to hacktheentrepreneur.com/sumo. And take advantage of this right now. That's hacktheentrepreneur.com/sumo.
Wow.
I like that. And so this ties in well to what we should talk about next, which is projects. But one project in particular, which is Faster Than Normal. It's your new book. It's a podcast. It's really, really, really good. And it ties into some things. But I want to know sort of just choosing a book. I mean, the podcast makes sense because the book was coming out, but choosing a book and seeing all the different books you've written, this is a hard choice, right? And it's funny because in the book, you have the four ADHD undeniable life rules. Rule number one is eliminate choice wherever possible, but we do have to choose what we're going to work on next. Can you sort of like walk me through like the mental process, Peter, that you use to choose a huge project to undertake like Faster Than Normal?
So Faster Than Normal is an interesting one to talk about because it's for me, I guess I was never diagnosed with ADHD until like my mid-30s, but I always knew I had something. It was, you know, there was no name for it in high school. And when I was growing up in the 70s and 80s in public school in New York, it was sit down, you're disrupting the class disease. I never had a name for it, but I always knew I was different. And I always wondered, you know, why am I always the kid who tries to be too funny and socially awkward? I had the social acuity of a gnat. I was just not my thing. But over time, I realized that as I get older, the things I was drawn to, skydiving, the commonality there was they were all things that chemically increased my dopamine, my serotonin, and my adrenaline. And then in my mid-30s, I was in my therapist's office, And he threw a book at me, and like literally threw a book at me and hit me in the stomach. I don't know if all, if everyone who visits therapists have therapists that throw things at them, but he threw a book at me, and it was called Delivered from Distraction. And it was by a guy named Dr. Ned Hallowell. And the opening paragraph was, having ADHD is paradoxical. You could feel like you were the smartest person in the room who can't accomplish a thing. You could feel totally confident and at the same time be as nervous as a cat in the kennel. And you can absolutely, positively, 100% intend to do something and simply not do it. And I remember reading that and just like bawling and being like, okay, my thing has a name. It's a thing. It's a real thing. And so over the past like 9 or 10 years or so, I started realizing that the things I did, from starting my own companies to working on my own to, you know, most people do a 5K and they check that off their bucket list. No, I signed up for a damn Ironman. They all have that commonality. And when I realized that, I started doing research and figuring out that, okay, I'm not the only one, right? So the podcast was actually first. I held a webinar and I posted on Facebook. I'm like, hey guys, I'm going to spend 45 minutes talking about how I use my sort of squirrel brain to like what I think is to help me. And if, you know, if you want to come by and hang out, it'd be cool. And I thought I'd get like 100 people and like 6,000 or something signed up for it. And I was, you know, blown away. And that's when I realized that other people either who had ADHD or just were, you know, just were wanted productivity back in their lives, sort of understood this thing. And so I said, maybe there are people who are successful CEOs or celebrities or whatever who have done this. And so I launched this podcast faster than normal. And, you know, we've had Tony Robbins, we've had Seth Godin, we've had Dave Neilman from JetBlue, you know, a whole host of people who have like literally changed the world. And they all are out front with the fact that, yeah, I'm ADHD and my faster brain has helped me do everything that I've done. And it's a gift, not a curse. And so from that, I realized that this would be something that I'd want to change the narrative about, because I'd never, everything else I'd done, like Harrow helped people, no question about it. It helped small business and, you know, get free press and all that. And I remember realizing how great that felt, remembering how great it felt to help people, to get these emails. Oh my God, thank you so much for Harrow. I thought I had to close my business, but then I got into the Wall Street Journal or whatever. I said, if I have this knowledge, maybe I can help people. And so for faster than normal, that's how it was something I knew I could do and something I knew that maybe could help people based on the info I had. And I've never gone into anything I've ever built thinking, okay, this is how I'm going to make money, which is probably, you know, maybe the wrong way to think. I don't know. I'm sure my financial planner would say that that's the wrong way to think. But, you know, I think if you do something that you want to do, that you enjoy, that you feel is can help people, you'll figure out a way to make money.
Absolutely. Was there ever a thought in it about tying it to what you've already done?
Well, I mean, the whole thing about having ADHD and having a faster than normal brain is that everything I have done, you could trace back to, you know, people who have normal brains don't wake up at 26 or whatever and call their mom and dad and say, mom and dad, I've decided I'm going to start a PR firm and I'm going to call it the Geek Factory. And this was, you know, 98 when social and the web wasn't even, they called it the Geek Factory. This will be awesome. Or I'm going to do a newsletter for my apartment because, you know, it can help it. I mean, if you look back in history, I guarantee you the people who, the founding fathers of this country, chances are the majority of them had ADHD. You don't, I mean, think about it. You're in Europe. Guys, I have this great idea. Okay, just hear me out. You're going to love this. Let's sail across to the other world. You know, that North America? You'll love this. We're going to create a whole new form of government, right? Like, it has a... No, I know we could get killed. Like, they could totally execute us. But hang on, you're going to love this. And I just, you know, I remember thinking back to even when I ran my PR firm. And I'd say to my employees, oh my God, I have this great idea. We should do X. And there was like this, they called it Peter time. It was like this 5 seconds after I said the idea where they just waited to make sure I wasn't joking. You know, like that idea is ridiculous. He's totally putting us on. If we say we agree, he'll make fun of it. Holy Jesus, he's serious. You know, and then it was like, okay, how do we do this? And so that, it's just, you know, I haven't figured out a way. It's nothing new. I've just figured out that I have ideas, and let's try them and see if they work. And if they work, great, we'll keep doing it. If they don't work, okay, cool. I'm, you know, hopefully richer for the experience. And so that's really what Help Reporter, and definitely what Faster Than Normal is. The difference with Faster Than Normal is I get emails like every day, like literally as I'm talking to you, I get an email with the subject line, your book is a lifesaver. Like it literally just came in. And it just makes me so happy. you know, this is my first non-business book, and it's amazing. It's an amazing feeling to write something that directly affects people and their children and parents, and it's really nice.
Yeah, it is really nice, and it's a phenomenal book. Absolutely is. I have a lot of authors on here, but this is a book that's like blowing me away and will stay in my collection. Lots of them end up in the little libraries around the city to go to other people, but this one will stay because it's really, really good.
It's very kind. Thank you.
So the idea of taking the podcast to a book, this is something else that I know the audience is like interested in knowing sort of how that process works. I know at the end of the book, you thank your agent who stuck with you throughout all the different books, or at least the last few books.
Mm-hmm.
So what is that process? Like, are you just like, okay, this needs to be now a book, so it's different than all the rest, but my agent can do it? Or like, I want to kind of know, like, how much do you question yourself or just trust your gut and just you in between flights and you're just like, email your agent, like, this is what I'm doing.
Is it possible to both trust myself and question my gut? Because the only time I've ever really screwed up in my life is when I haven't listened to my gut. And so my gut said, write this, you know, that you could turn this into a book, totally. And then, you know, the funny thing is, of course, like, imposter syndrome, which most entrepreneurs have and almost everyone with ADHD has, you can write this book and, you know, the other me is saying, oh, no one's going to read this. You know, this is ridiculous. No one's going to, what a waste of your time. You have no talent. This is not skill. So, you know, you deal with that on a regular basis. But the irony of that is if you had asked me 6 months ago, like of the process, I would have said, yeah, I wrote a proposal and gave it to my agent and said, hey, can you sell this? And she'd come back to me and say, yeah, we have a couple of interesting hits. And I'd say, that's the way people should go. But the funny thing is that after this latest book, I have realized that I don't necessarily know if my next book is going to be with a publisher. I actually think if I write a next book, and I'm sure I will, like when I write my next book, I think I'm going to self-publish. And I've always been of the opinion through all five books that, you know, anyone can self-publish, but if you have an agent and a publisher, you're taken a lot more seriously and da da da. This last book taught me a lot about the fact of, you know, how to activate an audience and because I really did a lot of homework on how to best promote this book for launch. And after the book launched, and it was a very successful launch, we were number one in all three categories on Amazon in which it was listed for like a week. And we're still, you know, in the top five and all that. But I realized that like a lot of the stuff that you would think a publisher would do, any publisher, they really don't do, you know, and you spend a lot of time, you know, 50 years ago, if you wanted to self-publish a book, it involved like, you know, glue and standing on a street corner and all that. And obviously with Amazon and self-publishing kits, that's not the case anymore. And so you would rely on a publisher to like, you know, do PR and activate the audience and everything. And looking back on it, I realized that for Faster Than Normal, I did all that, right? I hired a friend of mine who did the PR for me, and I activated my audience, and I was the one sending out emails for months in advance and offering free content and free stuff like that. And so I was like, why would I, you know, I'm not sure if I would go to the publisher next time. So to answer the question for you and your audience, if you are doing something, whether it's a podcast, whether you blog, whether whatever, and you feel like, hey, I have enough content or can create enough content to turn this into a potential book, my advice, sit down and write. Get it on paper. Get it written. Worry about how to publish it afterwards, because the majority of people that don't write books talk themselves out of it, right? They're like, oh, well, I wouldn't know where to begin. And no, you begin by sitting down and writing. I encourage everyone I talk to, sit down and write. If you have stories in your head, if you have stories on, you know, in journals, write them. Just get them down on paper, because the whole world looks a lot different when you're staring at 150 or 200 pages of actual written content versus the idea of, yeah, I should write a book.
Or get a return flight to Tokyo and write the book on the flight.
I don't recommend that for everyone, but for some people that does work. Yeah, my last few books have been written entirely on planes.
I love that. I absolutely love that. Interestingly enough, I had coffee with somebody this morning who wrote an article called How to Self-Publish a Book and Sell 180,000 Copies. I think you should talk to him before your next book.
Ha.
So he was trying to, yeah, push for self-publishing as well. All right, Peter. Well, man, this has been an absolute blast. Can I wrap up with one final question for you, please?
All means.
This idea I'm working with, calling the entrepreneurial gap. This seems to be this place I think we live in. You've been at this, I mean, since the 90s. You've had huge successes. I'm sure there's been highs, lows, wins, and losses. But as we always push forward as dreamers, as entrepreneurs, And I think we need to do that. I would love it if you could stop and sort of turn around and just look behind you right now and just sort of tell me how you feel about this whole insane journey up until today.
So I actually did look behind me, and my cat is staring at me, which is weird. But I will say this. So, and you know what? It's funny. I'm glad you asked me that question, because I try to add this to every speech I give, whether it's corporate or conference or whatever. And so it's great to be able to tie this in. In the 19 years I've been doing this, the one constant that I have realized is that entrepreneurship, you know, for all the highs and the lows and the great, you know, wow, it's amazing. And you know, entrepreneurship is lonely as hell, because being entrepreneurs, we tend to be constantly, you know, wrapped up in this race of, I got to do this thing and then this thing. And we don't necessarily have a group of people, or, you know, our friends, some of them aren't entrepreneurs. Our partners aren't necessarily entrepreneurs, and they don't understand. You know, they could say, oh, well, you know, you do this great stuff and you get, must be so cool. You get to work from wherever you want. And, you know, wow, you're at a conference in a warm place and you're, you know, writing this email from a beach. That must be amazing. And we tend not to share the negatives as much. And I've lost a couple of people in the past 19 years to suicide who were entrepreneurs, because they didn't feel like they had anyone to talk to. And I think that's just obscene. Mm-hmm. Looking behind me, what I wish I had known 19 years ago is that you're going to fail a lot more than you succeed. There's going to be a lot more oh shit moments than there are woohoo moments. The woohoo moments, though, are what keep you going. But, you know, you have to have someone or something or a plan in place to get that out of your system and take care of yourself when things aren't great, and even when they are. Because we stare at whatever project we're working on, and we're led to believe by our brains that whatever we're currently working on is the most important thing we'll ever do in our lives. And the fact of the matter is that we're the most important thing we'll ever do in our lives. And if we're not taking care of ourselves, we can't be at our best. And so I encourage everyone, every single one of your listeners, everyone, I try to say this as much as possible, is make sure you stop and make sure you're taking care of yourself and ask yourself, are you good? You know, and if the answer is not 100% yes, it's okay to say, you know what, I'm going to slow down a little bit and maybe I'm going to talk to someone, or I'm going to see what I can change. The oxygen mask theory on an airplane, right? You have to put on your own mask before you try and help others. Otherwise, you will suffocate. And a few years ago, I had a moment in my life where I realized that I was successful and doing well, but I was also doing things that were self-destructive, and I was doing them under the guise of, oh, I just need to blow off steam, or oh, I just need to do this. And I'm very thankful and fortunate and grateful that I had that sort of realization. But it's an amazing ride. I can't imagine doing anything else. But if I'd had one thing that I could have known from the beginning, it was to stop every once in a while and say, you know, everything okay? Are you doing all right? And, you know, if not, let's reexamine. Because it is okay to slow down. It's okay to take your foot off the accelerator every once in a while.
Beautiful answer, man. I like it. Can we now, we've talked about it sort of in passing, Peter, but can you now give the listener the quick pitch about the new book and podcast?
Sure, I'd love to. So the podcast is fasterthannormal.com. Each episode is only 20 minutes because ADHD. Yeah, the book is fasterthannormalbook.com, or you can get it on Amazon or wherever you buy books. And if any of your listeners either have ADHD or have an interesting story that ties in, I'm always looking for new guests, people to promote. It's, you know, again, it's turning into something bigger, but it started as a labor of love. And I love being able to talk to people about this. And my goal is to change the conversation. ADHD is a gift. It's not a curse. And people with it are not broken. They're not on the island of misfit toys. Their brains work differently, in the same way that if you drove a Honda all your life and then someone gave you a Lamborghini, unless you learned how to drive that Lamborghini first, if you try to drive it like a Honda, you'd crash into a tree. Learn to drive it differently, and you have a faster brain that can do amazing, amazing things.
Is the book just for entrepreneurs with ADHD?
Oh my God, no. It's for literally anyone who wants to get 2 to 3 hours a day of their life back in productivity. I talk about the rules that I use to allow me to thrive with ADHD, but they work for everyone. So I sleep in my gym clothes, right? I wake up in the morning, I put on my sneakers before I even open my eyes, and I'm going to the gym. I'm not going back to sleep if I'm fully in my gym clothes. My closet has, you know, two sides to it. One side is, they're literally labeled. One side says office and travel, and it's a t-shirt and jeans. And the other side says speaking/TV, and it's a button-down shirt, jacket, and jeans. My vests, my suits, all that stuff, that's in my 4-year-old daughter's closet in her room. Because if I'd wake up in the morning and have to look at this stuff, Oh my God, look at that vest. I remember that vest. Laura gave me that vest. I wonder how she's doing. I should look her up on Facebook. It's 3 hours later. I'm naked in the living room. I haven't left the house. So, you know, the book is full of rules like that that allow the entrepreneur and everyone really to sort of gain that time back.
Awesome. I love it. FasterThanNormalBook.com. Faster Than Normal is the podcast. You can find Peter at Shankman.com as well as at Shankman on the social channels.
At Peter Shankman, actually.
Oh, at
the
Peter Shankman.
Channels are all at Peter Shankman, yeah.
Okay, good correction. As well as, what is it, Reich Schoenfeld, the book, Me and Ted Against the World?
Oh, yeah. So Reich Schoenfeld wrote Me and Ted Against the World. It came out in the, I think, late 90s. It's a great read. It's all about the stuff that Ted never talks about. It was really interesting. You know, they took on something that had never been done before. You know, there was nightly news and that was it. And it was pretty awesome to see how he did this, how they both did this amazing new thing.
Very cool. I'll link to all of this as well as that book in the show notes for you to track down on hacktheentrepreneur.com when you get a chance. Peter, once again, man, thanks so much for stopping by. I really do appreciate it. And please, man, just keep doing what you're doing because it's awesome and inspiring to watch.
That's all I could do. Thank you, my friend.
Well, that was just a lot of fun. I've been wanting to, for a couple of years now, have Peter on, and I actually met him at a conference last summer in Barcelona, and it was great to meet him, and I'm glad that I finally got to tie him down. He is indeed faster than normal, so it's good that I finally got him on the show. Again, I don't always fully 100% endorse every book of every author who's ever been on my show, because books are subjective, and everybody likes different books, but I've read Faster Than Normal twice now in the last 3 weeks, I think it was, that I've had it, and I highly recommend it for just for figuring out your systems. And also, if you are one of the entrepreneurs that have these attention problems, this might help you understand yourself a lot better. It's Faster Than Normal. You can find it anywhere that you buy books. All right, so the excitement of getting to have this conversation has sort of dissipated now because the conversation is over. But I'm excited. I'm even possibly more excited to go back through the conversation, to go back through and listen to everything that Peter said so I can find that one thing. You ready? All right, let's do it. Let's find the hack.
The beauty of ADHD is that I come up with an idea on my first of two connecting flights, and then I get to the lounge and I wait an hour and a half for the connection. And in that hour and a half, I go online and I buy the domain name and put up a site. And then I take my second flight. And by the time I land, it's a business. And, you know, that sounds ridiculous and stupid, but literally that's how I launched Harrow.
And that's the hack. Peter, Peter, Peter. I love this. This is good. You preface it with the beauty of this. The beauty of ADHD is that you can just sort of act on these things. But this isn't, I don't think this doesn't have to necessarily be just to people who have ADHD. This is a brilliant mindset to have, to think about business, right? A problem I see with lots of people when we try and start businesses, especially like our first businesses, is that we overblow it as this huge thing in our head. Like it's a startup that's going to do all, like when it really just needs to be a landing page. See if people will take up your offer. That's literally something you can do. You can get a WordPress site or a Squarespace site, and you can put up a website. You can, like, or just a landing page. You can pay $10 or $15 to Facebook ads to highly targeted people and see if they at least sign up and say they're interested. Not even give you money at this point. So Peter says, he's like, literally between flights, I just decide on a business idea. I put up the site. And then I get onto the next plane for another few hours, land the plane, and he says, and I've started a business. He says he started a business because people were interested. If people hadn't have been interested, which it's probably happened to him 5, 10, 20 times that he's put up this site and nobody's been interested, that's part of it. It's Jim Collins, the author of Good to Great. I was just talking about this with a friend, and he has this theory called bullets and cannonballs, where you should be firing a lot of small bullets. And these are could be single page websites that are ideas that are being put out there until one hits. When that one hits, like Peter says, when he lands, boom, you have a business. Now, what do you do with the business? You launch a cannonball at it. But don't overhype it. Don't overthink it in your head that you need to launch a cannonball at things that you don't even know you're going to be hitting. I love this. If even if you don't have ADHD, think of it like this, where you don't overthink it. Just go with your gut and make it a tiny little step to see if people are actually interested. Peter, thank you so very, very much. All right, Hack the Entrepreneur. We're on the subject of faster than normal, turbocharging your focus, productivity, and success as we lead into 2008. I have a course just for you. If you are looking to find your focus really quickly and to find the 20% that's going to give you the 80% of results, the one that's going to allow you to fire a whole bunch of small bullets throughout next year, it's called Define Your 20. It's a tiny little course that you can buy for very, very little money on the website, and it will help you so much as you head into 2018. It's how I structure every single day, week, month, and quarter of my life, personally and in businesses that I'm running. And it's just what works for me. And I think it will work for you too, because it has worked for many, many people already who have been through the course. And you can find it, hacktheentrepreneur.com/DYT to find your 20, or you can find it just up on the website in the navigation menu. I think it will help you. And also Faster Than Normal, the book by Peter Shankman. Absolutely recommend it. Make sure to grab yourself a copy. All right, enough from me. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really do truly appreciate it. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.